As the days grow a little hotter, it's still good to see a good crowd forming. Lost a few regulars from this morning, we lost a few visitors, but we gained a few regulars. So it's a good trade-off. This morning we looked at the walk that a Christian must do, and primarily the deeds of an individual, his behavior, things that are required of him. By his deeds he should be judged. And that's pretty much a hard sell for a lot of the religious community. But we're going to push it even more tonight, because it's not just the deeds that we're going to give an account of, it's the very words that we say we're also going to give an account of. Something to notice just as a review as we get into this, or an overview, part one has to do with the types of words that we're going to be judged by. And to note that a lot of the things we're going to be discussing, the world doesn't think any big deal about. I mean, it's surprising sometimes when we go through the lists of things that condemn us or indict us, as in Romans 1. Sometimes it's things we wouldn't even think of. We come to learn that there's some things that God holds us accountable for that the world, thinks is no big issue. Also, as we get into the second part of this, I want you to notice as we go through why sometimes these various words are used, it's not just the why they're used, but also the scriptures that are given is God's answer on how to deal with it, the emotions that gendered up. And from what was just read, in fact, we can bring it this way, the idle words from Matthew 12:37, I say to you that every careless word that men shall speak, they shall render an account of, for in the day of judgment, for by your words you shall be justified, by your words you shall be condemned. And just before that, it talks about, well, where do the words come from? They're actually flags. They're indication of what's going on in the heart, because out of the fullness of the heart, the mouth speaks. So as we look at our own speech, as we see the things coming out of it, they're indicators to us. They're red flags as to exactly the state of our own heart. So this becomes a good lesson or profile in looking at the things that are going on or what we're doing that we need to recognize in ourselves that maybe we're letting slide. So as we go through this, idle words are basically useless words, words that do not accomplish God's purpose. Okay, that's a big problem of them. Godly speech should be used, and this is really a list here, first of all, to inform those who are doing what is wrong. I mean, there's a purpose to it, of what's coming out of our mouth. And it should be used for a good purpose, Matthew 18. It should also be used, this godly speech, to convert others to Christ and build them up with his word. Third, it should be used to help restore those overtaken in a fault. I mean, these are big chunks of what words should be used for. And by the time you get through using all of these, especially for the last one, it should be wise, gracious, and wholesome, where in Colossians it says, let no unwholesome word proceed out of your mouth. I mean, we have such a task to accomplish in this life, and a major part of that gets accomplished by the things we say. I mean, it's a reflection of, what did God use, in order to save us? And that is words. It was by the foolishness of preaching. It was the good news proclaimed, how beautiful the feet of those who proclaim glad tidings of good things. I mean, words are very powerful. And we have to learn to understand that. A lot of times, we just say what's in our, in our mind, in our heart, not thinking either the good or the damage it's going to do. Because it's just words, right? Sticks and stones can be, but words do hurt. They can hurt worse than the sticks and stones and do more damage. Since our words express our thinking, Jesus says that we will answer for our idle words. Tongue control is a very difficult matter. It requires the help of God as we change our heart, James 3. So what we're going to do is examine some idle word problems, knowing we will be judged because of these problems. Especially let us attack the cause of these idle words. That's the second part. So some various types of idle words, and forgive me for the use of cartoons, but it helps stick a little bit better and gets the point across. First of all, talebearing, the rakal, was originally just, it meant just to travel to a certain place. Now, the problem that developed is when merchants or seamen or whatever left their home and went to visit other places, too often they talked too much. They're filling in perhaps a foreign power, an enemy, eventually, about everything that there is going on at home. Strengths, weaknesses, the riches that are there. We had an expression during World War II, loose lips sink ships. Sometimes just the little things that you say may not mean anything, but a good agent can put this together, that together, and develop a pretty harmful scenario against a country. So it developed from that, this tale-bearing, and therefore it became a problem, and it was something that eventually became forbidden by God, especially because it revealed secrets that people should not know. So as we get into this, notice this, Leviticus 19, 16 through 18. You shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, and you are not to act against the life of your neighbor. Notice bearing tales is acting against another's life. It gets serious. You can ruin somebody by what you're spreading about them, what you know. Proverbs 20 and 19, he who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with a gossip. Now, a lot of these words kind of overlap. Okay, so we're going to get to the term gossip. So that's why I needed to put the original word there so that you know there's a difference between the words. The second is backbiting. Katalos was to speak evil or behind the back of those one may have been friends with. Because you were friends, you know more about that person than somebody else. Now perhaps you've had a falling out. You take all that knowledge and really begin to to ruin somebody. It was a common among those that had left God. This is why it's associated with Christianity. All those, in fact, if you've ever seen books on why I left the Church of Christ, all the things they have to say about it, although usually it's not really accurate. But there's enough truth there in order to do some real damage. We are warned that we can be devoured by such words. They consume the things that are precious to us, family, church, whatever. And if you say such things about your old friends, a lot of this has to say about you. What will your new friends say or think? In Romans 1, says, the backbiters, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents. Part of this list, that normally, we wouldn't think is any big deal, especially kids, disobedient to parents. But this list in Romans is something that that Paul says, they're worthy of death if they practice this stuff. In Galatians 5, 14 through 15, but if you bite and devour one another, take care lest you consume one another. What a lot of this does, and I've seen it happen in too many churches personally, where it's not doctrinal issues that people may have discussions over, but it's personalities, it's what they want, if they start undercurrents, they start little cliques, you group people together because, to get them to go against someone else. I've just seen churches just melt apart. A lot of people are just going, I don't know what happened. And they don't, because it was all subliminal, all just people, what people were saying behind somebody's back, there's no way to put a finger on it, nor did they deal with it. This is why it becomes very insidious. Another thing is murmuring. I had to change this. You'll notice it's spelled different, because these are transliterated words. They're not the actual Greek word. And when you do that, you've got two G's in Greek. The first one is pronounced like an N. Okay, so if you like the word angel, angelos, it's actually A-G-G-E-L-I-O-S, but it's a nasal G or something like that. So it's you pronounce it like an N. Okay, so I had to change it on this, you know, when I finally caught it. So if you would change it in your handouts, I don't think I did it on that. So the anguzo is to grumble or to complain without rightful consideration, especially while not considering one's blessings. We use the expression of people that look at life as a glass half empty instead of looking at it as a glass half full. But we've mentioned the fact that a Christian should be looking at life as half full anyway. It should be looking at, as you start to count your blessings, that cup is up and overflowing, you know, to the brim. And it just takes a matter of, you know, considering, you know, just exactly what we do have in this life, you know, how much God is working in it. The Israelites murmured over their lack of water, Exodus 16:1-3, although God had always taken care of them. When they needed water, they got it, several times miraculously. And they forgot that it was only a short time where God had actually parted the waters in order to rescue them from the Israelites, from the Egyptians, when they were in the life of slavery. They murmured over the negative spies report of the land of milk and honey, and with serious consequences. Napoleon said it's a soldier's right to grumble or to complain. God doesn't think so. He says you ain't got that right. This is why Deuteronomy 1:34-36, then the Lord heard the sound of your words and he was angry and took an oath saying, none of these men, this evil generation, shall see the good land which I swore to give their fathers. Because they grumbled in the wilderness, they all died in the wilderness. Okay? It's that serious an offense in God's eyes. This is something that stayed with the Israelites through all their generations. Okay? Notice Luke 15:1-2, and both the Pharisees and the scribes began to grumble. And it cost them their heritage. Okay? After the death of Christ on the cross and them putting there, grumbling about all he was trying to do and teach them, okay, the Jewish nation died and was no more. You know, God had enough of it. Evil speaking, the root word is blasphema, is to say bad things, scurrilous, calumnious, false, malicious statements, anything meant to hurt against men, and blasphemy railings against God. Christians are warned that if we are to speak, that we are to speak the truth in love. It, the blasphemy, must be put away from the new character. It can't be a part of the Christian life. In Ephesians 4:31. It says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you along with all malice. Okay? Most of us are guilty of this. yeah. Put you into the LA freeway and man, your Christianity just sheds like, you know, who knows what. Real easy. And it's one of the things we have to watch. We can't excuse it. We have to be careful not to get caught up in it or consumed in it. Slander, you know, look at the root word, diabolios, which we get our word devil from, okay, is to falsely accuse. This is why the devil is called the accuser, the slanderer. To falsely accuse as you withstand someone. The wives of elders and deacons are especially warned not to be slanderers. I mean, these are individuals that, a lot of times, you know, an elder will go someplace, and if he's taking his wife with him, especially if he has to counsel some woman, you know, they're in people's homes. They're seeing, the problems that are there. They see things about people's lives that other people don't, just because they're trying to work with them, counsel them, help them. Therefore, that should not be taken out to the general public. A psychologist knows that there's a client privilege, and pretty much is borrowed from this. The Christian should understand that as a professional, not just elders or wives or whatever, but all Christians, if you're helping someone. Romans, I never can get this right, if it's 15:14 or 14:15, when it talks about, Paul says, I'm convinced that you have all knowledge and are able to counsel one another or admonish one another, depends on your translation. You should be able to help one another. That is, if somebody's sharing their problems with you, that problem should stay with you. It shouldn't be talked about to somebody else. And finally, the word kind of familiar with. Oh, no. We got through that already. Gossip, again, it's a different word. Phulo means to babble or to prattle, to talk much and foolishly, or to tell and repeat idle talk. Widows are not to be tattlers, which we get the word from. 1 Timothy 5:13. At the same time, they learn to be idle as they go around from house to house, not merely idle, but also gossips, busybodies, talking about things not proper to mention. Again, along the same kind of word group. It's covering everything. And just talking nonsense, talking idle words. Your speech reflects your intelligence and your spirituality. If your words are shallow, chances are your character is shallow. This is why you should be careful, especially if you want people to listen to you. Make sure what comes out of your mouth is worth listening to. If you're just constantly running into the mouth, eventually people will begin to turn you out. With your children, if you're constantly coming down on your children, eventually the children learn to tune you out. Okay? Make sure you're selective in what you say. Make sure you mean what you say and back it up. Whether, it's anything, any kind of a speech where, say, it's just telling the truth, Jesus says, you should always be known for telling the truth. Should always be known for, weighty and heavy language, so that people begin to respect you and respect the God you worship. Your words become very important. So, now, how do we get caught up in this stuff? Well, some of it's from frustration. Idle words can come about because of our frustration with a brother in Christ. If things are not going as quickly as we desire, our mind is working overtime and speculative cycles, and too often we let our minds engage our mouths to let out our thoughts. That is, we're talking faster than we think. So what do we do about it? Well, we all get frustrated. Have you ever seen a child get frustrated? Generally what a child does when they get frustrated, they either throw a tantrum or they go in the corner and suck their thumb. Okay? What you're looking for is something a little bit beyond the adult equivalent of that. Okay? Nothing looks good on an adult when he starts throwing a tantrum or starts yelling and screaming or whatever, or just pouts as if he's a little kid in the corner. You need to learn how to handle your frustration. Okay? It's something that can happen in this day and age very easily. What we're told is to walk in a manner worthy of our calling with which you've been called, with all humility. Okay, first of all, sometimes we get frustrated because we think people ought to think more of us than they should. Okay? One problem that we can deal with. The other is gentleness. Just trying to be, as you're working through a problem with someone, be kind about it. Maybe back up if you have to, listen if necessary, see if there's another way to work around it. With patience, how do you develop patience? get your mind on something else. Tell them you'll sleep on it. A lot of times, you know, when your conscience can't handle it, your subconscious can. So you let your mind work the way it needs to work. Showing forbearance. That's literally laboring under something that's a mighty weight. Keep on, keeping on, plugging away, you know, bear under it. It's a job you have to do. Realize it's part of your purpose. And when you realize it is part of your job description, you know, it helps you reconcile to the fact that, you know, you need to deal with your frustration. Envy and anger, if we become envious or angry toward a brother, we may not be cautious enough to guard our actions. But petty enough to say what's on our minds, you know, up one side and down the other. God counsels us that if we do well, though, it'll be acceptable. This is something that goes back the very first counseling lesson that you'll find in the scriptures. Here's Cain totally upset with Abel because Abel's sacrifice was accepted and Cain's wasn't. Now, the counseling is very simple. I mean, God appears to Cain and goes, you know, listen, I know you're upset and you're working yourself up about this. Why don't you just do what's right? I told you to offer a proper sacrifice. Abel did. It's acceptable. Go back and just do it right this time. And then, you know, you'll find acceptance. You know, everybody give you a pat on the back. You did a great job. Your countenance will be lifted up. Very simple fix. Just do it the right way. But too often we bucket that, and that leads to worse. You know, he warns Cain, sin is crouching at the door. Okay? Cain didn't listen. He let the sin feed on him, and it took him to the point where he finally ended up murdering his brother. Okay? So as God talks about these things, you know, you can't go just, they're just words. They have horrible consequences. They will take you out of a relationship with God. You may end up having God working against you in this life as he did the Israelites. He's trying to give you something that's going to help you get through, to make life more settled, calm, dignified, you know, easy flowing, you know, able to work out problems and solutions. I mean, this is what Christianity is. It's a help for all the things you have to face. When you start ignoring the instructions, everything's going to go wrong. So if somebody, you know, is doing better than you, learn from it. Ask them, you know, either, you know, give them kudos, you know, pat them on the back, say you did a good job. Perhaps they'll do it, you know, when you get ahead. Instead of making an enemy, make a friend. You know, learn from what he did. Cain should have learned from Abel. Okay. Envy can be a good thing. Unfortunately, the way we use it, it's often associated with what is bad. A lot of these idle words come from disappointment. If someone disappoints us, we may be tempted to talk about them. I mean, we're frustrated with them, you know, you badmouth them, whatever. We are not to use opinions over our liberties. You know, we do have certain liberties in this life, but it's not a liberty that we can say take liberties with. We have to be careful when we have even gray areas. A lot of this is from Romans the 14th, where you had no definite instruction. But there's this, you know, from 1 Corinthians 12, we should always remember that we're members of the same body. I mean, we make allowances a lot of times in households. Ladies, sometimes your little brother can be an absolute jerk, but he's still your little brother. Okay? And you make allowances for it. Because he's family. Well, Christians are family. Okay? Is everybody going to get along? No way. But we're still family. Okay? We shouldn't be making some allowances. There should be care and love and forgiveness and everything else as part and parcel of the Christian family. In fact, I'm reminded again about the people that Jesus put together as disciples. As I recall, nobody ever said anything bad about Judas. Yeah, John says they knew he was a thief. still trying to help him along. Jesus is still trying to encourage him up to the very last hour. We're reminded that Simon was a zealot. Okay. Matthew was a tax collector. Under any other group, Simon would have gladly slit Matthew's throat. They were that adverse in their ideology. But as fellow Christians, they learned to get along. And this is the way we need to approach our own lives. Romans 14, 2-3, let not him who eats regard with contempt him who does not eat, and let him who does not eat judge him who eats. Okay. Even in this context, it's a matter of judgment what goes in your mouth. Now, Paul has made no end of the fact that he considers everything edible. There's no longer clean and unclean. He learned his job a little faster than Peter did. And so as far as Paul was concerned, even the meat sacrificed to idols was just meat. The idol was nothing, and he could eat that. And pretty much says, as we get into further into Timothy, that although there's going to be those that forbid certain foods, he goes, there's nothing that should be forbidden as long as it's taken with prayer and thanksgiving. But now you have somebody in Romans 14 who feels that, perhaps a vegetarian diet is the only way to go. He may feel very strongly about it. Now, I think why God doesn't put very strict regulations on these things is because everybody's different. I know of people that perhaps a vegetarian diet is the very best thing for them. Okay. In fact, you'll find a vegetarian diet was what was the vogue before the flood. That's all Adam and Eve were allowed to eat was vegetables. It was only after the flood that animals became something that was edible. But just the difference of it. Some people can eat vegetables and be fine with it. Other people eat meat and they're good with that. Certain foods affect different people different ways. So God says, whatever your conviction is, okay, fine, go with it, but don't condemn the other person because they're just different. In fact, the picture there, was a little kid, how often did we want a toy for Christmas and got a shirt and socks? Man, don't you just hate those Christmases? Okay. Don't let it get to you. Okay. Mistreatment. Idle words are easily produced when others mistreat us. God did not respond with evil speech when he was mistreated and therefore stands an example as how we should behave ourselves. I mean, a lot of times we go through life, I was so mistreated. Really? Did they stick you on a cross and mock you? I mean, if nothing else, what helps this is just to remember our Lord. 1 Peter 2, Peter reminds us, while being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. Turn it over to God. He'll judge who's wrong and who's right. Get on with your life. The Orientals talk about revenge and anger and all this. And one of their classic expressions is, for a man who goes off on revenge, he must first dig two graves, one for his enemy and one for himself. Because now your life is so totally consumed with it, you're not going to live the life you should. Let it pass. And finally, just our own insecurity. Those who are insecure will often say things that they should not, just trying to bolster their own petty little egos. Everything we need to be secure is given to us. As a Christian, we're finding a beautiful balance in life. On the one hand, there's people that are very self-degrading, depressed, feel that they haven't got any worth. Why are they here? For the one thing, God says, you're special. You've got something inside of you, a soul, that is very precious to God. That should lift up your status in your own eyes. I mean, God is very much aware of you. I mean, if he's aware of every sparrow, or if he knows every hair on your head, I mean, he knows you that intimately. Do you know how many hairs you got on your head? You don't even know yourself as well as God does. He takes that much of an interest in you. So you should be able to lift yourself up just by, all that, when Christ died, he died for you. You are that special to God. So that should lift you up and put you, where you belong in this life. Now, when you overdo it, it's time to start rethinking things also. Really. Okay, because you are special, God takes care of you. Which means, think about it. Start counting your blessings. And where did they come from? Okay. He gave us seasons as a reminder that he's always here for us. That's what they're here for. For people that like all the four seasons, they like to live back east, so they get all distinct seasons that come about. They like the heat, but they also like the snow in the winter and all that kind of stuff. Where does all that come from? It doesn't just happen. God provides it. He provides the rain for the crops, causes the grass to grow, causes the rain to fall. As you go through the Old Testament, of all the things that God causes. If you think it's a done deal, go to Four Corners in the United States sometime. Okay? If you go down to the museum in San Bernardino, they've got a little pamphlet there that tells you at one point at Four Corners, the tree rings show that it did not rain almost for like 90, 100 years. And they bring out the point as an example. Can you imagine an Indian that in his whole lifetime never saw a cloud burst? Just didn't rain. James talks about Elijah, who prayed and it rained for 3.5 years. Prayed before that it not rain, and it didn't rain for 3.5 years. Because God's the one that has his hand on the weather. He also has his hand on the governments. I mean, Washington can bicker all they want about who's going to be in power and who's going to rule what and who's going to be overlord of the earth and stuff like that, but they don't realize that once you kick God out of government, God's going to bring that government down. He says that over and over in the Old Testament. Any ruler. I mean, it's hard not to find that. Here's Nebuchadnezzar. He's out boasting how great an empire he made, and God made him go out and eat grass like a cow until he came to his senses. And when Babylon fell, how long did it take? I mean, it was the mightiest nation on the planet at the time, with walls that are impregnable. But it fell in one day. Our expression, the handwriting's on the wall, comes from a biblical expression of God telling somebody, hey, it's over. Whatever you enjoyed in your nation, forget it. It's passing away, just like that. Okay? Even the New Testament, Paul tells us that he's the one that determines the life of a nation and puts down the boundaries of its habitation. The lines on the map are lines that God drew before man did. And even among ourselves, how arrogant can you be when you realize how much is going on that God has a hand in among people? He can harden hearts. He can cause strong delusions. He can have us believe our own weird dreams. Bad counsel. We looked at that last week. Or he can grant us wisdom. So many things that God affects us internally or just externally, he can take a stand against us and there's not a thing we can do about it. Even as we begin to serve God, I often think, you know, I got to really think this thing out, be just how much worth I am. You know, I'm up here being a preacher. Am I doing a good work? I don't know. The message comes from God. The power's all in it. When you get to the other end of it, once it's been preached, it's God that makes the converts, who's worked with the heart, who causes the increase. You know, how worked up can I get about that, you know, in my ego? What have I really furnished here? But it's still part of my job, something I should be doing in my service to God. I should be doing out of love and forget the ego trip. Second Peter 1, seeing that his divine power has granted to us everything pertaining to life and godliness. You having problems? It's time to go back to the Scriptures. In the Scriptures is everything you need to know. I mean, what is he trying to do? He's trying to give us a character, a personality, a spirit that is able to stand against anything. He's trying to help us to grow up and mature. Okay? Look at Christ. What was he doing? His wisdom surpassed everybody among the Greeks and the Hebrews. Okay? His power was demonstrated far beyond anything, even the power of the Romans. Whether it was physical force, he knocked them all down in the garden, or just spiritual force. After his resurrection, his kingdom, a spiritual kingdom, took on the power of every nation in the world and overcame it. Okay? The power of the gospel could do something that the power of Rome couldn't. Rome could not conquer the German tribes. They were just too fierce, too barbaric. But the evangelists went in among them and converted some of the tribes. And therefore they came over to Rome when Rome became Christian. So what the might of Rome couldn't do, the power of God could. It's awesome. And that same kind of character and nature is what God's trying to give us. He's trying to give us a relationship with him so by the power of prayer, we can move mountains. Okay? And once you get this character aligned, all these idle words vanish. They're gone. They're not necessary anymore. They just don't appear because the inner heart, the mind, the inner mind, the spiritual side of us is completely converted. And we behave like our Lord. And if there's anyone that, you know, would like some extra help in doing this, we've got some wonderful people that show good character here. You know, the elders are picked for that. There's some good quality in the deacons, some of our teachers. Yeah, there's a lot of help that can be provided. Yeah, if you just turn to it. And of course, the invitation's always out there. Whatever help you need. Want your request be made known as we stand to sing.